very romantical.
Yes. Good morning on this fine sunny Tuesday.
Good morning. We're in a romantical mood.
I'm Abe and that's Joe and we're all here together.
It's all cool in the morning. And you know what? They stole our theme song, man.
That works. We're here.
Yeah, our theme song been stolen, but we ain't afraid anyway.
Yeah, where our voices are still going out to dozens of people.
12 or 13 at least. Oh, my goodness, we are excited. And it is talk radio on KBOO, 90.7 FM dial. I'm Joe, he's Abe. 231-8187.
So we have somebody coming in.
We have.
I want you to tell us about him.
Then
we'll run through a mess of biz before he gets here.
Okay, Josh McPhee, who is this poster artist. Artist is an important term here, who also is pushing the idea of public art by spontaneous political action.
Wow.
You know, like remember I've been pushing chalking the sidewalks?
Mm-hmm.
Well, stenciling is more like it, and putting up posters and making noise and making it, putting it out there, man.
You can't have a spontaneous stencil, man. Yeah, you got to make the stencil ahead of time.
Now you're being kind of literal, aren't you? Yeah, it's true. You have to plan it ahead, and you have to think about what you want to say. Keeping it simple, making the design easily readable, that's the whole deal.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that.
Well, cool. So he'll be in telling us how we can do that and where
we
can
do that.
And
a couple of great art shows that are in town and, you know, just a bunch of stuff that we don't normally do.
Oh,
normally.
All right.
And people will call in and discuss the whole thing of publicly supported art, establishment supported art.
Huh.
You know.
Well, that sounds like good art.
Well, that's why I said, hence spontaneous.
Yeah.
As it were.
That sounds like fun, even.
Now, you know, the guys who jump in the bull ring and take on the bull are called, I can't remember the Spanish word, but they're spontaneous. It's not that they're really spontaneous because they plan it ahead of time. They have a cape and stuff.
Matadors?
No. Matadors are the scheduled act. The spontaneous are usually young men, sometimes women, who want to have a chance to work with a serious bull in front of a serious crowd.
So they just hop in there with
You don't know about this?
No.
Oh, this happens.
I'm fairly ignorant of bullfighting.
I used to go to the bullfights.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, a lot of our audience, of course, doesn't approve of bullfights.
No, I can't say I'm a fan.
No, because you think, well.
What, did you slowly kill a bull?
Yes.
That's not acceptable entertainment, in my opinion.
No, I suppose not. I think, I guess it isn't, but, you know.
Yeah, now, cockfighting, there's a sport.
I'm not going to even think about what you're saying. All right. We are serious here, and you have a bunch of serious stuff.
Yeah, I do. A listener last week asked me to run down, in a nutshell, this whole intelligence situation we talked about last week.
Yeah.
Okay, here it is in a nutshell.
Okay.
Last week, CIA chief...
Now, you don't literally mean a nutshell, do you? I'm just teasing you about the spontaneous. Go ahead.
Okay, no, that's a metaphor.
Metaphor, yeah.
It's an old tried-and-true metaphor, so it's pretty far from... spontaneous. All right, last week, CIA Chief Portergas stepped down. We don't know why, but we can only assume it's at the urging of the White House.
Pushed down.
Goss was the replacement for his predecessor, George Tenet. Tenet oversaw the intelligence agency in the lead-up to the war in Iraq. He originally was a favorite of the administration because he was willing to allow, essentially, the administration mislead the country by downplaying reports from his own administration that, in fact, there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. But he was able to readily suppress those reports. He gave the green light for the president to go ahead with what he wanted to say, and we went to war, and the rest, as they say, is history. Tenet actually received the Presidential Medal of Freedom for his patriotic assistance in the war effort. But he fell out of favor with the president when he decided that it was inappropriate for Vice President Cheney to point out or to reveal the identity of a covert operative, Valerie Plame, whose husband had cast doubt on the administration's claim that Saddam was looking for uranium in Nigeria. And everybody knows this story.
Yeah, Cheney shot a guy.
But before that, Cheney outed a girl before he shot a guy.
Yes.
Right. And not because she was gay, because she was undercover.
Right.
Are you with me?
I'm with you.
Great.
There.
Great. Okay. So Tenet,
more like a woman than a girl.
A woman.
Yes.
Yes. So Tenet was first the darling of the administration, then the administration's pariah when he decided not to play by their rules anymore. So he stepped down. Portergas stepped in. Goss was a former intelligence operative himself, later a member of the House of Representatives and a
member from Florida.
Yep, a member of the House Intelligence Committee. He was put in the CIA by the president, mostly to clean house, to get rid of dissidents. As soon as Goss stepped in, a whole lot of career professionals started resigning, either by choice or under pressure from the CIA, and replaced with political toadies. There are even reports of new hires being asked what political party they were registered with.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And even reports of longtime operatives being subjected to lie detector tests to determine their political loyalties.
Wow.
Yeah. So Goss stepped down. What we really don't know why, but we think that it's connected to the ongoing Jack Abramoff / Brent Wilkes government for hire investigation. Apparently Wilkes, kind of the Uber briber in the whole Abramoff scandal, ran a number of hospitality suites in and around Washington at which he would provide poker games for congresspeople and after the game, hookers for congresspeople.
Well, I mean, you know.
Yeah. And Goss, while he was a congressperson, was admitted at some of the poker games, but claims he didn't stay for dessert at work.
As it were, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Another guy who was also there was a number recently retired number three guy at the CIA, a guy by the name of Dusty Fogo, who is also tied into the whole Abramoff-Wilkes scandal. And I think that because of his connections to Goss and Goss's possible connection to the bribery scandal, he stepped down. But as I said, we don't really know. So that, well, in a nutshell, is it.
Now, there's another element which is highly in dispute, which is the truth story, which broke on Saturday.
Right.
Which is a rumor.
And Rome's going to be ignited.
Yeah, that Rome...
Ignited.
The Rome's going to be set on fire. No, it's not. No. That Rome's pants are on fire. No. That Rome, was told, the rumor, which has no substantial, several people claim true, who are close to the grand jury again, that Rove is, it was told, his attorney was told, that Rove was going to be indicted, and that Rove went to the president with information.
But we may find tomorrow the grand jury is meeting again.
Yeah, but it might not be true at all. It's one of those rumors we all like could possibly be untrue.
Exactly.
So
anyway, that was the intelligence situation in a nutshell. But
yes,
that thread will continue to run through the things I'm going to talk about. Now, when this whole investigation began, the one that may lead to Rove's indictment,
yes,
over, of course, the outing of Valerie Plame, Dick Cheney has all along claimed that he was not involved.
Right.
But recently, a document was made public. I guess that's part of the evidence that the grand jury is looking at.
Yes.
And this was a photo of Williams' New York Times op-ed, the one saying the administration is full of crap,
right,
in which Cheney scribbled a number of things in the margins, some interesting things he scribbled in the margins.
Like what?
Like, have done sort of thing more, send an ambassador to answer a question, do we ordinarily send people pro bono to work for us, or did his wife send him on a junket? So...
His wife being Valerie Plame.
His wife being Valerie Plame.
The not outed yet
person. And this was a guy, a person whom they claimed, we didn't know he was safe. Or she wasn't really a covert operative. We don't know anything. And this really is all the more disingenuous when the right, when this whole thing broke, Republicans and their supporters, claimed that Wilson was saying around that they needed to look into this. But apparently Cheney didn't really know anything about it. And certainly Wilson didn't go at Cheney's behest. So this is all a very convoluted sort of thing. But apparently Cheney knew about this from the get-go, knew about
Cheney knew,
obviously, attempt to dissent.
Bush knew. Nixon knew.
And so this leads us on to item C this morning, the ongoing crackdown by government against leakers or confidential sources. In this case, ones that, blow the on all these nefarious constitutional things.
Like newspaper reporters now doing their job, First Amendment.
Right, exactly. This... Very interesting. This was mentioned on a Kibu News talk, if you haven't been listening. This is from a blog called The Blotter, written by ABC News reporters Brian Ross and Richard Esposito. This was written on the 15th. A senior federal law enforcement official tells ABC News the government is tracking the phone calls that we, this is Ross and Esposito, call in an effort to root out confidential sources. It's time for you to get some new cell phones quick, the source told us in an in-person conversation.
That would be like trying to stop the freedom of press through spying on press, using the excuse of the war on terror.
Yeah, this is really frightening.
I think our listeners have figured out, as the Bush administration gets pushed close to the wall, they're going to get crazier and crazier. They're going to violate more of the Constitution, more outrageous things, look for people disappearing for all kinds of weirdness. Because they are really, really absolutely on the pale of is normal in the normal corruption of American politics.
Oh, absolutely. And they're getting more and more desperate. The wheels have completely fallen off their enterprise.
They're still flying.
They're doing something.
Yeah.
Well, they're sending 6,000 troops down to fortify the southern border.
Yes.
Yeah, did you hear that speech last night?
Yes.
That was just dumbfounded.
Yes.
We're sending 6,000 troops down, but we're not going to be militarizing the border. Because if we were militarizing the border, we wouldn't be sending troops and guns.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
6,000 troops, of course, long border.
Yeah, it is a long border. But we're not militarizing it. Sending the military.
Support. They're going to support in high-tech stuff.
Yeah, well, they said they're going to do...
Just till they get some new border patrol.
They're going to help build barriers. They're going to build boats.
Barriers. That's like the Berlin Wall. Will they have,
right.
They said they're going to have movement detectors. That's like the East German border during the Cold War.
Yeah.
You're supposed to have the automatic machine guns?
But no.
Because that's what we should have.
Well, we're not going to militarize the border. But what was really interesting to me is there's no set table for us to stand. It was kind of like in Iraq when we said, well, President has the right to stand up, we will stand down. He said that...
Well, they have to duck the shooting.
Right. The guard at the border is be with on as we add more freshly trained border patrol agents.
Yeah. So apparently, as we call them, even as a teenager in San Diego, the border nuts.
The border nuts.
Okay.
So apparently we've reached a point where we have no exit strategy for troops deployed in our own country.
Well, no, we're going to pull from the border in Iraq.
Yeah.
Or pull them out of Iraq and to the border.
I don't think this is a policy decision at all. This is an attempt to appease the right-wing base.
Exactly.
Who's been hurting him because they really want him to militarize the border with gun towers and barbed wire.
And they want a death penalty for any woman who wants an abortion.
Yeah,
after the fetus is brought to term.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah, so I think we're going to set the stage for another codpiece moment where the president, clad in gleaming, plill, sits astride a Hummer and waves peace around and proclaims the border.
Something very like that, or perhaps he'll come out of an aircraft, especially turned to the San Diego and land.
Perhaps.
Mission accomplished.
This time it'll be in Rio Grande.
That's kind of, it's a little better. They better choose the winter because that river gets shallow.
I said he'd be on her this time.
Oh, Hummer. Hummer right. Can do anything.
231-81, that's the number to call. We'll get a few phone calls in before our guest.
Yeah. And we're also going to talk about, I want to not forget this because it's really important. We're going to talk about the Ford's in the context of this string thing. Because I feel a little guilt about this. And in general, the left has not done enough about Patrice Lumumba Ford. Sad, which people don't even know who it is.
Yeah, he's one of the group of American Muslims.
The Portland Seven or something.
Seven
like
or six or however many.
Yeah.
They were supported the ass, I guess.
Well, maybe it was in this area. What happened when he is buds? Mm-hmm. They shot their guns, which is perfectly legal, in a quarry in Washington State while wearing garb that was not American.
Right.
Okay, there's a law breaking there.
No.
But, uncool. Anyway, so then they did that, and went to China with a vowed intention of going to aid people who were suffering in Afghanistan. But he never got across the border.
They never made it.
The Chinese were friendly to that, I expect. And then he came back, and then after a while, they busted and threatened with so much dire consequence. This was during the hysteria that people were being disappeared and stuff. And he had copying and got big, long sentences.
Yep.
And now the question is, now that he's his symbolic usefulness, can the communities that care about people rally to get this guy out? I mean, he's black, African-American. He's Muslim. He's a patriot victim.
Very humble.
It seems like whatever he did, since he didn't actually take arms against the United States, whatever he did, which I don't know what it is at all, it seems like it's time to get him out of the joint.
Right.
We'll deal with that a little bit.
And during that whole, prosecution was not wanting to make certain evidence public on the security grounds.
Right.
But when there's absolutely no bearing on national security, nothing would jeopardize the government's effort to do anything. Well, it might jeopardize their efforts to, spy on us.
What's going on is an attack on the press, attack on amendment rights of everybody, attack generally on all our constitutional rights, and all of it fueled by this hysteria after 9/11. And it's a great excuse to transfer money from the pockets of ordinary citizens to the hands of the extremely rich supporters of the Bush administration.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's incredible that the American people can be so easily frightened and gulled.
Well, apparently not anymore.
People are getting wise?
Oh, yeah. Every poll taken by every organization shows just an abysmal amount of support for this president. And tanking. Only Nixon in the modern era has had lower poll numbers.
Well, but Nixon was not a crook.
These guys, no.
No.
Nixon tried anything close to what these guys. Nixon subverted the Constitution attempt to be re-elected. Subverted the Constitution intent still permanent one-party rule.
I think they subverted the Constitution in 2000 and 2004.
They attempt to institute permanent one-party rule. Right. Just be elected.
Right. No, I think this is the closest to a coup we've ever gotten, I think. Maybe. It's kind of scary.
I don't think we've gone so far over the line that we back.
Well,
but, I mean, we're getting
pull it back to,
close.
And this is the irony. We'll pull it back to what? The system we used to criticize a few years ago.
The base steps, man. I mean, I'm serious. We got to do everything we can to arrest this juggernaut before it goes any farther.
Well,
first stop it and then figure out how to get where we need to be.
But, you know, they've accomplished so much. They now have gerrymandered the Congress so that it's going to be hard to elect anyone except them. They have they've essentially rigged the Supreme Court to be their court.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then they control the executive branch. That's all three branches of government.
Yeah, and they're able, in key battleground states, are able to steal elections.
So, yeah, using their electronic techniques.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Well, not only that, but they've gathered the phone records for tens of millions of Americans.
No. Yes.
Yeah. It's really interesting the way that's come out.
Dribbles and drabs.
Yeah, this whole NSA spying thing. First, they said, "Well, we're only spying on foreigners. Who, if we monitor anybody in the United States,
they're still saying that. They're still confusing it.
It's because they're calling foreigners outside the United States.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, well, maybe we're monitoring domestic calls as well.
Some.
And they said, okay, maybe there's just some ordinary Americans we're spying on too,
for unspecified
kind
of reasons.
Yeah. And then they said, okay, well, no, we're not listening to these phone calls. We're just gathering records of who called whom.
Right. It's just a trap. You just catch the
numbers. And so a few weeks from now, they're going to say, okay, we've been listening to some, but only to a few.
Only to a few reporters.
Right.
Who are not loyal to the United States because they're reporting what they find out.
Right. And so we're going to root out their sources. And that should be a lesson to any of you thinking about ratting us out, because we're going to find you.
But the rats are coming. I mean, people are talking. A bunch of CIA people are coming out of the woodwork. It's hard to keep up.
Well, hold from quit. A whole bunch of them quit because intelligence agents whose ethics might be dubious by the nature of their work are going, this is ridiculous.
Well, I think some of them are actual patriots. They're upset because this is not serving greater interest of the United States people. It's only serving the interest of these disguising themselves as patriots.
Oh, yeah.
If you're a right wing, you should be upset.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, never mind right politics, beyond dynamic. This is very, very serious. This is coup time.
Oh, yeah, it's astounding. Ooh. But it's happened by degrees. Nothing big dramatic, midnight terror takeover the White House.
It's the old Latin American thing. You're sort of wishing the military to take over because at least, can't buy that, because at least they are patriotic in some manner. This is really serious. But the Army's mad because the Navy and the Marines are so mad because they were into Iraq too little too late on a bunch of dumb pretexts and were being cut up by a fee of Rumsfeld's.
That's right. Who's essentially said, well, you go to war with what you got. So too bad. Right. We're on the verge of the nation's intelligence apparatus being taken over by the Pentagon.
But I have to say,
woe betide us if that ever comes to pass.
But I have to say that the regular news, the mainstream news, whether it's the Oregonian or even the Times, which is doing like a little bit of the job, but or AC or NBC or CBS or any of those guys, are joking about this. They still act this is a legitimate government. They wake up and say what is obvious.
Well, braver than they have in the past, but
that's
not saying a lot.
Boy, they sure swallowed it whole hook, line, and sinker after 9/11.
But when Time sat on the whole NSA story for more than a year, sat on it. The paper of Kurt. And that's listeners, why we bring to media as much as we do.
Although, as you suggest, they're starting to get some courage.
Yeah, but it may not be enough, and it may just be in response to public opinion.
It's very scary.
There seem to be no set journalistic standards by which they abide.
And what I find even more terrifying and disturbing is the degree to which the American people are passive and frightened and hoodwinked. I would expect that by now you wouldn't just have demonstrations like the organized anti-war things, which all, of course, take place and should take place more than they do. You would also have spontaneously, like this movie, V for Vendetta, spontaneously you'd have graffiti, you'd have, as they were writing on the sidewalk, you'd have people speaking out in bars, you'd have people speaking out at beach, people interrupting on concerts, the breakers, because,
of course,
and saying, hey, this is all.
We're going to talk about spontaneous art here in a moment.
We're going to talk about art.
Yes,
we are. Going to kind of join us. And we're going to talk about that a whole bunch. But we also want to remind people, this is Talk Radio, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the number to call is 231-8187.
Yeah.
And if you just tune in, this is KBO 90.7 on your FM dial. That is Acher. I am Duras. And joining us in studio is Josh McPhee, who is interested in public art. And we're going to talk about that a whole bunch.
Let's take BT's
phone call. Let's take BT's phone call.
Okay.
He's one of our center regulars, but conservative.
Yeah.
Aren't you?
More BT.
Now, BT, we know that everybody does an 8-second day that's creating conditions.
Turn your radio down. Yeah.
Okay, so while we stall for 8 seconds, BT, are you there? Well, who put this?
I don't know. Nobody's calling us talking much and don't have calls, but it has been ringing.
Well, no, it's not our. It's the system.
Okay. Well, still, the phone hasn't ringing.
It's a system.
Phone has been ringing.
System. BT. Okay, well, while BT figures out the system, I want to come close to the mic. I want to welcome Josh McPhee. Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You need to talk into the... Remember, this is funky-ass radio.
Okay.
That's better. There we go. Be close to that microphone.
Okay.
Pretend like it's your best friend. You know what I'm saying? I think you know what I'm saying. We invited you here because of the fact that you're a strong advocate and in fact a health producer of what you call PayPal's aptics.
Yes.
So what...
I believe that art can be extremely powerful and of extreme value in society when it reflects on or is politically or socially engaged in some way. The art doesn't have to be a beautiful object that is outside of the rest of our lives, but actually relates to and is in connection to the world that we live in. And so I'm embedded in that.
So just so we get this out of the way, there are two shows that you're involved with going on right now. First is the Food for Thought Cafe at Portland State University, which is this vegetarian cheapo food place.
Correct.
And there's a show that's got June's going to run through 16th, available 8 in the morning till 7. Now, it's kind of a funny venue.
Right, that's Paper Politics. And it's actually a great venue for this show because basically you walk in the door and those are completely covered with prints from around the world. Stencils, silk screens, etchings, aqua tint, name it. And board to ceiling, you know, you walk in and you're surrounded by these prints from around the world that deal with the current war, feminism, different sort of human rights issues from different parts of the world, all different social justice issues. But there's people from all over Portland who go downtown, and that's the place where they're going to get coffee, and where they get their lunch. So it's not just PS students, but as far as I understand, and definitely from the opening, where there are 150, 200 people
there.
Yeah,
I was amazed at the crowd.
There are people use that space, and they'll see that work, and they'll sit down, and they'll stare at it while they're coffee, their lunch, and hopefully get them from
it. Yeah, you know, actually, it's a great show. And there are several reasons why you're on the show for us, and I appreciate your being here. Part of it is to publicize the Paper Politics show. There's another show you're having. Can you tell us a little about that?
I had a small show at a place called Valentine's downtown.
On Ankeny. Next to Dan Louis' Oyster Bar.
My Portland geography is still a little
rugged.
But it's a small show that I'm doing with my friend Icky, who's a local printmaker, and Dara Greenwald. And Icky has prints, she has videos, and then I have some print assemblages of little, you know, card and wood pieces and things. And it's all very little. In some ways, openings last night, and a bunch of people came out, and that was great.
Well, your art's also affordable, which is kind of interesting.
That's one of the goals, is to try to make art something people feel like we put their lives in, rather than something that's separate or distinct that's cost thousands and thousands and for only rich collectors. I mean, I always sort of felt that if I could sell 100 prints for $10 each and, you know, make $1,000, that would sell one painting for $1,000. Mm-hmm. Rather than one who can enjoy it, then 100 people bring it. Part of our world, and then people see it, and I mean, it's a much more valuable way to have art into the world.
Now, the other day I walked down, can't remember what street, but I noticed on where the posters are for all the music venues and stuff, there was this poster that said, Free Lumumba Ford, Patriot Act Justice, Black plus Muslim equals scapegoat, and it's this smiling, sweet-faced guy with a turban and a beard, African-American-looking guy, and this case is part of the Portland Seves. Is this your poster?
I designed that poster as some friends of mine asked me if I could do a redesign of a poster that Lumumba had been putting up around Portland since the case had started, as a way to try to develop local consciousness around this case. And that's something that since I was in high school, I've been involved in different aspects of street art, taking art and bringing it to the street, posters and graffiti and stenciling. So I gladly said I would work on design the poster, hopes that it would gain new eyes and bring people to sort of look at the case and what was going on. It seemed like a great process.
Well, it is, and I talked with your neck about that too. But I also want to sometimes about how to do start cheap and easy expert.
We're gonna
talk about this case, and we're also gonna remind people you're listening to KBOO 9.7 on the FM dial. This is Talk Radio. The number calls 381-78. Proctor's my partner. I'm Joe Uris, and Josh McPhee, who is the street artist extraordinaire, at least for today, is on our show coming out of the East Coast and hitting Portland two projects. Which are very interesting. I'm going to mention just one, the Paper Politics show at Food for Thought Cafe at the student at the Portland State University in the basement.
Yep.
And it's a cool, I went to it. It's a very cool show. It's incredible. And by the way, there's also a book, I don't know if it's available, but out of the Seattle Print Arts program, an exhibition of politically and socially engaged printmaking, people called Paper Politics. which I guess we can get through your website?
Yeah, it's available at justseeds.org.
Okay. Say that again?
Justseeds.org.
Justseeds.org. Okay. We got our caller BT back, thank goodness. Hi, BT.
Good morning. Maybe not.
No, see, it's just, I want to explain to people. You be patient. We have this 8-second delay. We don't know why.
Yeah.
Because it's a mystery.
Good morning.
But it is every RT. Perhaps we can't hear him on our things.
Uh-huh. It's hot.
He's there. No, he's there. We can't hear.
Can't hear.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, it's very
communication.
BT, hang in. Try to figure this out. We love you. We want to hear from you. We want to kind of rational conservatives. Wouldn't you say
that? Yeah, I'd say so. So just tell us about the sort of real art, cheap and easy here. Tell us what you advocate.
Well, I think that since I've been in high school, and I've been interested in stencils, and stenciling is pretty much the most basic form of printing. Taking a solid object, punching a hole in it, and then pushing paint or pigment through that hole. And that hole could be a circle, or it could be an extremely elaborate design.
Uh-huh.
People have been doing it for the past, I don't know, 22,000 years.
Okay.
From cave paintings, where, you know, basically you stick your hand up against a wall, chew up berries and spit them out, and that's a stencil. You're doing an impermeable thing, which is your hand, and then going, you have the pigment correct it.
So you're breaking new ground as you're talking.
Not at all. I mean, this is about as easy as it gets, and people have been doing it for as long as none of us can remember. So
let me pretend for a moment that, let's say, and this would be wrong, I saw a blank wall somewhere, not in a very attractive building, but just, you know, some construction site, let's say.
Right.
Where in old days, say, post no bills.
Right.
Okay. And I thought to myself, this is a great spot. By the way, I don't know if it's not around town so much, but it's neat. It's an American flag, and then below it is a American flag draped coffin symbol. It's a very nice piece by somebody. It's just beautiful. But let's say I had a cause. Let's say I wanted to support getting out of Iraq, just to pick a random topic. Or let's say I was against the Christianization of the public schools. Something. And I designed a very simple, I could come up with a very simple design, perhaps three words.
Huh?
No, Cicero always said three words. Okay. Really keep simple. And I could cut these into a stencil. Now, would I be right in thinking that a handy-sized stencil might be opening up one of those card covers, file folder, I think they call them?
Manila file, extremely durable.
Yeah, and they're cheap. And then I could either use paint with a roller, when I slapped it against that blank surface.
A foam roller and house paint.
Yeah, or if I'm willing to put a mask made of some Krylon.
Yeah, spray paint. Durable. It's extremely easy, extremely durable. You could use file folders. You could use postboard that you can supermarket, scraps of paper, transies or different kinds of mylar plastic people use. Refrigerator boxes, corrugated cardboard if you want something sort of bigger or, you know, is a little bit sturdier but flat.
The thought spotted to this, and in many venues don't have serious penalties for doing.
There are increasingly serious penalties to the point where, I mean, they're actually going to show some true colors about where priorities lie. We have a situation in New York City where they have posters up announcing
ugly posters
for reward for turning information about graffitiers. So you could get up to $500 if you turn in, like, the address where someone lives and writes graffiti. Yet the same districts that are doing this, if in a gun, buyback program, you get $200 to $300.
So it's a better deal to rat out some graffiti writer.
It's a better deal to rat out a 14-year-old than to take a gun off the street, which shows, you know, what's important to them.
Well, there was actually a movie some years back, I can't remember the name of it, about a graffiti writer in New York, and I just don't recall. It was about 10 years ago. But the thing is, that one of the things I noticed is a real issue, a real problem. There's stuff aesthetic, which is, in my judgment, aesthetic, sometimes not political, sometimes political. There are stuff important politically. And then there's the people who just, I love the term, throw up, who just throw up initials or something in some kind of incomprehensible thing that's gang-related. And it's all over. It's ego-based. It's like, my name, that's it. Well, how do we?
Well, I think it's a misconception that it's gang-related.
Ah.
I think that actually the government, local governments spend an immense amount of energy to convince people that the majority of graffiti is gang-related, and it simply isn't.
Uh-huh.
In certain cities, it's used by gangs, but most of the graffiti that you'll see is not, and the gang-related graffiti almost always stays within very specific areas and neighborhoods that different gangs are relating and trying to mark their territory. Most of the graffiti comes from a totally different etymology, which is in the 60s and 70s when most large cities in the United States, particularly East Coast, start to collapse because of capital pullout. And kids look to a future where they have no hope of owning a home, you know, lucky if they even get a car and don't see any jobs. The sort of this development of marking territory with your name as a way of claim on the environment, as the minister to be dissolving around you. And then that sort of what is now developed into what's considered hip-hop or traditional graffiti, which is writing one's name over and over and over again and increasingly develop styles that primarily only other people who write graffiti can read. And that I actually, I don't and never really have done that type of graffiti tool, but I appreciate it on a lot of levels. The actual effort that it takes to develop the kind of hand style and those sort of letter forms is extremely complex and developed almost a calligraphy of sorts.
That's become one of the principles of hip-hop culture, isn't it?
Correct.
So it's, in a sense, sort of transcended its roots and become part of this flowering.
Right. I mean, it exists in multiple different levels, and it's actually spread across the world. There's barely a country in the world that doesn't have, at this point, its own native graffiti scene and development that is usually in part inspired by New York and Philadelphia graffiti from the 1970s and 1980s.
A lot of it seems to be, some have to say this, kind of anger at all inside institutions, which means you get a nice granite building that built 200,000 years ago in Europe, and somebody puts some graffiti on it, and it's hard to get it without destroying.
Well, one of the things about graffiti and about spray paint is that it wears away naturally with the elements.
So, that's something I didn't even know.
So within, depending on how much on direct sunlight or how exposed to the elements, most graffiti within 4 or 5 years gets basically faded away.
So
we have temporary.
So this last weight and this aesthetic of objects is too much.
And you see that in Europe. I mean, Europe has an extremely different relationship to graffiti, where a lot of European countries, it's sort of as a rite of passage teacher. It's kind of expected that kids will write graffiti for a period of time. I think, in large part, in Europe, they have a extremely different relationship to private property. It's not that it's not important, but, I mean, it's the central tenet, in large part, to our society, is the belief that all property needs to be owned by a single individual or corporation. And if it's all, there's no commonwealth anymore. It's extracted and must be protected by the individual. And it's just, that obsessive feeling about property doesn't exist in other countries.
I have to tell our listeners, if you're trying to get into us, we're trying to get you on the air. The problem is some kind of technical glitch that we're working on. You are listening to KBOO, and it is talk radio with Abe and I. And our guest, of course, is Josh McPhee. And we're talking about graffiti art, talking about kind of right in the street or off streets or on the wall next to the street. And I am disappointed in, I have to say this, I'm disappointed in the lack of a spontaneous.
The size of business cards, but so interestingly done that people actually like them, read them, collect them, pick them up, take them with them. But the ideas that would be on them, you would have to have the date so that it would be interesting. It would be of this time and in a response to this time. And it would have to have the concern clearly stated on it in some way. And then the rest of it, completely art. And it would be an expression. Kids would trade them. Adults would read them. You could find them on the bus. It wouldn't be worse than litter. It could be biodegradable, and it doesn't deface anything, and it doesn't raise an anger and a distaste for the concern that's being expressed, whereas some things that you see, you go, you get against the idea because it's so unappealing or, you know, offending. And I think these small cards, business cards, could be interesting.
You know, that's an interesting idea. Josh, what's your response to that?
I mean, I think that everything, every angle is worth taking up. I'm a full supporter and behind the sort of diversity of ideas and artistic expression. So I think that people should gladly and definitely do that. I think it would be important addition to the dialogue. I don't think that it necessarily needs to go
either or
in opposition to or against other forms of street art. I think that they could work in harmony. I mean, maybe some people will see that and then it will raise their awareness about other things that they see and say, huh, maybe there's some connection here. Maybe there's a increasing number of people that are interested in these ideas.
Let me suggest this, Gretchen.
Yeah?
Here's the deal. I think we all need to do our own. God, I'm going to sound like a hippie. Do our own thing. We all need to create our own art, and we all need to have a role in the public sphere with our politics and our aesthetics. And I think what you're suggesting is a great idea. I don't think it's an either-or. I think you should take on that responsibility with others, build yourselves a little short-term collective or whatever, and make a bunch of those. If you can afford cardstock, go with that. You know, it's pretty cheap to duplicate nowadays. And knock them out, put them in various places. I remember when poets were doing this, hanging stuff on trees. And put the stuff out and see if it has some impact. I also remember, by the way, a larger project, it turned into too nice for me, which was the Shadow Project, talking about the consequence of nuclear devastation by making shadow stencils on the sidewalks.
Uh-huh. Yeah, for Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think, but Gretchen, I think what you're suggesting is a great idea, and I think, I hope, that you and others will do that.
I think it chains along and it weaves in with the rest of stuff. It's something a little different than a T-shirt, but you know most people do read most people's T-shirts. You know?
Well, I'm always caught up in the T-shirt problem when I stare at other people's chests. You know, it can be misinterpreted. So anyway, thanks a lot for the call.
Alrighty.
I don't know why. I said that.
I don't know either.
I better not say.
It was fascinating what you said about the amount of resources spent in a city like Chicago to eradicate graffiti art. And it seems especially ironic to me, given that it seems like people are competing for every possible available square foot that falls vision to sell some product or service or another.
Correct.
Yet, a large chunk of resources allocated for eradicating something that's organic, that's spread, that reaches, true outpouring of the culture.
But it's not based on the profit motive.
Well, right, exactly. And
right, individual expression. Yeah. And individual expression must be squashed. I mean, if you look at, in the 1970s and 80s, when all the trains covered with top to bottom, sitting full of graffiti. Often there are pieces were messages to the people that were riding the trains, and we get this revisionist history in which that's what destroyed the trains in New York City. If you really look, I mean, the trains were these rusting, ugly hulks of metal had been kept for over 20 years or falling apart. The kids were beautifying these train systems that had been abandoned by the government. I mean, they're literally collapsing. And actually being messaged on into for the rider to sort of cheer them up on their way to work. All the holidays celebrated, Happy Mother's Day, sort of very external-looking messages. All of that's removed, and just as a side, originally with a buffing solution that all the kids called Orange Crush, which is sort of a play off the popular soda, but also a reference to napalm and Agent Orange in Vietnam, because it was an extremely toxic chemical agent that the city had tested. Others in train yards while getting sick, and kids who played in a playground in the Bronx across the street from where they had all this thing solution all got sick. I mean, a train worker who was 40s died from handling the material. They didn't know on it. I mean, they didn't remove the graffiti. Ironically enough, it didn't actually work. It just was brownish sort of hate what the graffiti that had been there before, making the train even uglier than they had been when, at least in their opinion, it was ugly when the paint was on them. So, you go from then to a situation now where Chicago or New York City, you have trains that are entirely advertisements and buses, top to bottom, front to back, full size advertisements.
Ordered and bombed for.
Yeah. So if a 14-year-old kid does it, immediately needs to be militantly crushed. But when some large corporation comes along, takes the same exact idea, but accuses it of commercialized private space or advertising increasing amounts of our visual landscape, that's a great idea and it needs to be done.
My question then, in terms of creating guerrilla art that's vital, that comments aren't events, that's altered direction, policy direction, for example, what methods, what places, what sorts of things have found to be the most effective, the most immediate impact to stay around without being removed the longest? What sorts of avenues have you tried?
I mean, I think that this is a complex question. I don't live in Portland, so I don't necessarily know what the environment is here. I think that it's really a trial and error process. For me, increasingly what's important is sort of taking a page from this book, an advertising book, which is, when you develop a message or an image or a slogan or a poster or things that you want to put out, and you want people to react positively to it, you bring people to your message, or you want to communicate a certain idea, then do some sort of testing of whether it's going to work. Get on a bus with your poster and walk up and down the aisle and say, what do you think about this? What does this mean to you? Like a little R&D, so to speak, for our messages. And I think that, a lot of people will find, they'll get on the bus that does a certain thing. By the time they get to the end of the bus, and if they'll figure out that they need to go home and change what it said because it's not communicating what they thought it did. We all sort of live in our own worlds, and we don't realize that our thoughts aren't, shared by everyone, and that just a little bit of effort can, extremely boost the effectiveness of our messaging by talking to people.
Let's go 2318. We have Francis.
Hi.
Francis.
The name of the movie was Turk 182.
Right.
And I appreciate you a lot for putting the right perspective on graffiti art is in the hip-hop culture,
uh-huh.
And how it comes from the people. And I can't say thank you enough for somebody finally put saying something. And the way you put it was real cool.
Well, thanks.
One thing I wanted to express some concern about, I appreciate that you're going to talk about Patrice Lumumba Ford. When Bush made his little statement, speech or whatever it was yesterday about the Border Patrol and bringing in the National Guard, there's something he said that was what I think we should be most concerned about is how they were going to enlist local law enforcement into helping with this immigration incident.
Ah, you caught that, and you're right.
And that is probably where the front line will be of constitutional rights violations.
Yeah, you know, they're
more profiling, more targeting.
Right. They keep to nationalize local law enforcement.
Right.
They did it under the Treaty Act, and Portland had this to see go away, but they keep pushing. Many of these adopted it, there's money involved, and this is just another effort along those lines.
Right, and I don't know what all involves. He didn't go into much detail.
No, he didn't.
Anyway,
I don't think
that should be a concern.
I think, appreciate call.
All right.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Thanks, Ray.
I want to mention this, before we go any further, I want to again mention this Freedom Before It poster, because I think it's time that we got the guy out of the joint. I think it's disgusting. I mean, okay, I don't know what he did. I don't think he did much. I don't even know what he intended, which is more to the point.
Right.
And I'm not going to make any judgment about that. Oh, is he accomplished so little in the way of harmfulness to our society? Ridiculous. He gave him, 18 years? Some horrendous sentence. Huge sentence. And I would tell people, we're going to have available here, as long as they last, some of these smaller versions, the Free Lumumba Ford poster. I want to ask people to take, it's a small version, I want people to take not one, but one you can keep, because I notice they come down and people are hanging them in their houses, because it's a cool piece of art. Congratulations, Josh. Anyway, one you can keep, but the other one, your responsibility is to put up on a telephone pole or something somewhere in the public space. If you take one, take two, put one up, and let's make sure that this message gets out a bunch. I think it's time that this guy, whatever he did, which is not anything as far as I can tell, it's time to let him go. He served again to purpose of the Bush administration. We now know the war was a bunch of... We now understand whatever else was going on, that a lot of people were victimized, Muslim people particularly. Here's a guy who wants to be American and a Muslim to boot, and he served their purpose. He's done his time. Let him loose. I just had to say that. I'm fed up with this crap. I got to tell people something about Kate Boyd. 9 o'clock when the cover is host. Tim Schumach interviews Sarah Waters, author of The Night Watch, and such special novel set in World War London. This is 9:30. Bia Yaman interviews Liz Pearl, longtime editor and publisher, about her book, Money, a Memoir, Women, Emotions, and Cash. At 10 o'clock, environmental journalist Elizabeth Grossman talks about high-tech trash, her new book examining the dark side of where computers and other electronic equipment comes from and where they go when you're done with them. 10:30 on special edition Stage and Studio, hear about the experiences and contributions of Southeast Asian refugees who came to Portland after the U.S. withdrawal from the disastrous war from Vietnam 1975. And at 11, on Democracy Now!, my all-time favorite program, Brian Ross, chief investigative reporter at ABC News. This is a guy who discusses their C report. The guy is now tracking phone calls made by journalists from the New York Times, Washington Post, and ABC News. Also, a look at the militarization of the border with Mexico and a feature on Cop Watch's news report, Hurricane Halbert, climate change, and catastrophe. All this and more on KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
Now, we've talked about tipping points on this show.
Yeah.
The fact that an investigative course for a major broadcast television network, the fact that he's appearing on Democracy Now! May indicate that a tipping point has been reached.
I hope you're right, man. I think I still believe in my heart of hearts that American people love freedom. I mean, actually hate this like the show. They really, really understand it. They love it. They don't like what's going on. They don't want a one-party government. They are conservative. I acknowledge it. But you know that. This is not conservatism. This is some kind of right-wing religious fascists. In fact, I'm doing a panel state with a professor on Wednesday the 24th at 3 o'clock. And I can't remember the room, but I'll have that next week. But talk about the idea of Jacobinism in America and in other cultures. We're going to one of the professors, Tom Liggett, is going to talk about the French Revolution and the Jacobins, the original Jacobins. And then this other guy whose name I'm so sorry I forgot, who's a professor at
Linfield.
Linfield, yes. Who's going to, and who's going to read about it, who's going to talk about the Leninist Jacobinism. Then I'm going to kind of close it talking about Jacobinism. And the point we're going to be making, really, I think, isn't the right-left issue. It's a notion looking forward a humanist, and I quote around that, freedom, quotes around that, no, agenda forced upon part of the world. And that's, and upon our own people, even to the point of cutting people's heads off if they don't agree. And we're going to talk about that.
All right. We'll go back to the phone.
Yeah, and back to the phones, and with us, Jack Fee, talking about paper politics.
Who do we have, bro? Aaron, good morning.
Good morning. How's it going, guys?
Pretty
not
good.
Not bad.
Good. It's a pleasure to be on the show. I love KBU. I love listening to you guys' show in the morning.
Sure.
But just had a couple things to share. I myself have been recently learning more about graffiti artists and that type of stuff. Of course, when I grew up, I was lived in Utah and was told graffiti was bangers, and I remember going to California and seeing it and being kind of scared. I learned something recently. I have, my parents are both over in Denmark right now. That's where my father's from. And they said that graffiti there, they were kind of surprised with the whole country didn't graffiti much. And that I've seen two guys out there that were working on it on this general. And as they were police called, like, my parents are real conservative. They voted for Bush, I'm sorry to say. And our son, but when they saw this guy, they were excited, thinking that, okay, he's going to bust it for doing graffiti on the wall. But lo and behold, the cop got their vehicle, started talking to the guys who were painting and were actually critiquing, going, oh, you might want to do this, do that, car, and pulled away. So graffiti, as far as I know, they've been observing, is not an illegal deal. That was a kind of big contrast for comparisons of countries and stuff. And there's one thing I want to share. It's not on graffiti, but kind of similar to the difference in the themes that I've taught here is when something else happened, and it was really interesting. And that is in parents and stuff, go to church or go to the gym or go to a different place, and they're inside, went out, or went into a worship. They actually leave their kids in their strollers on the curbside out front. So you go to a particular building, and here's a whole nation of children here, strollers, all their stuff. You go, don't work, do their thing, come back out. I thought it was kind of interesting. My mother told me that every time she's seen that, she's never seen any of the kids crying or upset or all happy being outside. So I thought that was kind of another interesting difference there. But that's all I had to share.
No, that's great, man. I'm glad you pointed that out. Josh, you were talking about the greater tolerance in Europe for graffiti.
I mean, I think that it is illegal still, but there is a huge difference for it to the point where people are doing it in the middle of the day. It's just sort of expected. And I actually think that increasingly the larger community sees it as part of the fabric of life and becomes interested in it. Sort of, in some countries, almost everyone's kids do it, so they know how to read it and see it as, because, we tend to see, because there's such a huge crackdown within the United States, we tend to see primarily small tasks, very, simple, sort of dirty scroll is what I really call it. And I think that when those perform a lot of flourish, you see more and more what are called busters or masterpieces or the multi color, sometimes 8-12 color, to the bottom pieces that become increasingly more like works of art. They're developed master's painting where you throw down a bottom layer and you do an outline on top of it and fill it in, and it becomes sort of an aesthetically beautiful part of the landscape. We rarely that kind of work here because of the criminalization of the art form.
I've seen this in New York and cities on the East Coast and in L.A. and San Francisco. I don't see it so much here. But I also noticed in Paris, of all places, they pull down these shutters when they shut shop. Shutters now are all painted at the best of the shop owner with these amazing, off-political but not always, main pictures that are essentially graffiti art.
Well, graffiti is on some sort of ethical code. Different writers have different codes, but in large part, the more complex it is, the more it's respected. So people don't write on top of it. So sometimes, with pull-down gates, people have extremely developed, more mural-like pieces done so that people won't tag smaller things on top of it.
Uh-huh.
And then, in cities that have rich political traditions, usually murals are respect graffiti written by graffiti, and they don't write on top of them. There's sort of a hierarchy to the value of the work that most people respect. So, I mean, it's not some sort of utter lawlessness. I mean, there's an internal code, which isn't universal, but that has developed over years of different artists respecting for artists' works and the level of craftsmanship and things like that.
I think this is really important, and I want to urge our listeners to experiment on your own. Get yourself a file folder, one of those Miller folders. Take yourself an X-Acto knife, or even a scissors if you can't do it any other punch hole. Crudely sung. Don't start out with something that's going to be kind of frustrating to you at first. You make people out now. Bush bad boy. it doesn't matter. But the idea is some kind of simple, this is important, easy to-read message. You can put it, if you don't want to mess up a wall that you're a little uncomfortable with that, a foam roller or a spray can on the sidewalk.
They even make spray chalk now.
Oh, spray chalk?
Yep.
Okay, so it'll go away with the first rain whenever that happens. the fact of the matter is that we need to get into the habit of taking the streets and presenting this material in the streets. And I want to talk about a problem with that. Because Americans are so tidy, in a sort of property-based tidiness seems to rule our culture. People may be antagonistic. One of the reasons why maybe that doesn't have to happen as much as it should is this kind of antagonism. The case that we, as the public, is becoming more and more disenchanted with these quasi-fascists in power, we need to take the lead in printing the options to people and seeing that there is visual resistance. And this is so important. And I think that people should be doing it. And I don't think that should be one person or 20 people. I think it'd be thousands of people. You don't have to make many images. If there's enough people, 10 images, 20 images. And you know what? Let's say you get caught. Worst case scenario, they're going to make you clean graffiti. the irony.
And then you can do a really bad job.
Oh, I think you can. There's all kinds of ways to clean graffiti.
Or, you know, on the flip side, if you own a shop or if you own a cafe and you've got a blank wall, you can, you know, let it be known that you're turning that blank wall over to people in the community you want to hurt.
Yeah, you know, there's been a big fight in Poland about the problem of commercial postering, commercial buildings. So this is that now. For a while, we had past ordinance where buildings of any sort, whether they were art or commercial strain, could exist. And that's in response to the huge cell doors that have been put in alcohol and whatnot. Now, on the other hand, I think the loosening of those rules, the problem under the First Amendment is you can't allow, quote-unquote, and not allow commercial art, quote-unquote. So it's an interesting point. I think it's solved by the action of the people. It resolves around the spontaneous presentation of the people's art in public spaces. It
becomes truly democratic.
Yeah,
that,
really
that
democratic.
That cacophony of voices is, in a certain level, what democracy looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm willing to take some neo-Nazis out there, but I'm willing to take the risk.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that you brought up the billboard issue because Portland's unique on a certain level in most major cities, certainly not New York or Chicago or Houston.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little public consciousness concern around the commercialization of the environment. And so, again, you'll hear people talk and rage on about graffiti, but never that they make a peep about the fact that their environment's completely littered with these billboards, these commercial messages, and what are called street teams and snipers that go up and put advertisements on consumption sites, people's walls, you know, for movies, records, things like that. Somehow that all becomes acceptable because it's paid for.
Mm-hmm.
Yet when people actually try to raise their voice and do something far more democratic, which is put out, you know, a large sort of representation of the viewpoints that are in the reality, then that comes into that.
Yeah, you know the now virtually for-profit healthcare industry, particularly the hospital industry, has these huge, where they have billboards, yeah. Have these huge billboards. OHSU has one. And I would love to think, I'm not advocating this. Interesting to discover, and I buy one of these, to see in exactly the same lettering where it says, you know, cutting-edge science, saving lives. I would like to just insert it in there in the same types, fit right in nicely, costing you fortune, or ripping you off. Or taking your money or something, just put in, insert it in there, so that it's almost seamless. So that as you read it, you go, and some people who put up for it and the people who put it, maybe you don't even notice it for a couple, 3 weeks.
That or that everybody's just gone, and instead there's one that says free health clinic.
Yeah.
That it needs to be here.
All right, let's go back to the phones.
Yeah, 231-8187. Who we got? Ed.
Ed, good morning.
Good morning, Ed.
Just saying, Ed.
Oh, hey,
who is?
Sounds like Paul.
Yep.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, first of all, you're going to be doing a show on jackalope, did I hear you right?
Jackalopes, yes.
Joe? All right,
French
cool.
Jackalopes, Bushian jackalopes.
Okay, yeah.
What?
I people from Eastern Oregon and Montana, we want to turn it for that.
No, man, wait, free Lemon Buffet. That's ahead, anyway.
So, Josh, I saw one of your posters this morning, one of the planes and all the bombs, the countries that we've bombed since World War II. It was really impressive. And so I'm wondering, are these going to be available? Are your posters going to be available at Laughing Horse Book, which is now moved to down around the corner from Kibu on 10th or someplace? Is there someplace where people can buy these? I thought that was impressive. I mean, it was striking, what it conveyed and everything. It was also shocking and disturbing, but I mean, it's good to be dark and everything, and I'd love just lots of these out, and there's going to be some place where people can buy them, like Laughing Horse.
In the past, Laughs has carried some of my posters, and I don't know what they have in stock now. Unfortunately, I don't have a ton of time to run around to all of the local stores, but all of the work can be found on my website, which is justseeds.org, JUSTSEEDS.org. And also, really, if anyone in a local store or place that's in them, they can also get them at wholesale through the website to put in their stores and sell. So, I mean, unfortunately, in cities and cities, it seemed I wasn't there, but a huge explosion of posters and that stores were carrying them, and there were poster stores, and people, you know, they could see a poster up on the street, and people put them up in their apartments and dorm rooms, and there just isn't the networks now for the distribution of student poster art there used to be. Be nice if we could develop that again.
You know, put the store there, go to justseeds.org.
Justseeds.org.
Thanks for the call, Paul.
Thanks a lot for the call. And I want to remind people there's going to be that while they last, we're going to, I understand, we're going to, and there'll probably be tomorrow, but there'll be some of these versions of the Free Lumumba Ford poster. What I'm asking people to do is to take two. One for your own use. I know it pulled the walls. I don't think pulling them off because they hate the poster. I think it's because it's such a beautiful piece of art. It's fine for you to have one in your house, but if you take one, take two. Put the other one up in some public space.
Spread
and I think plus seems like a very fair thing. It's Free Lumumba Ford, Patriot Act, Justice, Black Muslim equals scapegoat. It's a beautiful piece. And again, this is about Patrice Lumumba Ford, who was one of the Portland Seven, I think it was called. And essentially, whatever he did, the only thing he did was he shot a gun in a bar in Washougal County, I think.
He also helped the president achieve a great victory.
He did. Inadvertently do
and
that.
And reward by, you know, incarceration.
Right. And he was essentially railroaded into the federal prison system. The other thing he actually physically did was he went to China with a view toward helping a fellow Muslim in Afghanistan. But, of course, he didn't get to Afghanistan. He didn't do it. He gave him a huge sentence, and I think, whatever, it's time him out of the joint. You know, really. Enough is enough.
Man, that's what I want to live in. You don't go to prison for not doing anything.
Well, you'd think. I mean, you know, if your thought, your evil thoughts, you go to prison. He didn't even have evil thoughts. His whole motive was, as he puts it, to help women and children. I mean, come on. Railroad.
Yep. Shoot. Jim is next.
Yo.
Hey, Jim.
Good morning, gentlemen. Enjoyed your commentary from both of you about this whole mission of public art and taking back the streets in that sense. Anyhow, throw your curveball. You used a term earlier, legio-fascism.
Yes.
And it got me to thinking about The Godfather Part 3.
Oh, The Godfather Part
3. I haven't heard anybody's good thing about film. People rant and rave about how great The Godfather and The Godfather Part 2 are, and nobody ever talks about, I didn't understand why Parts 1 and 2 were any good until I saw Part 3, because that brings the whole story together. All the incest and the incest relation of the church and the state and the family and the violence and all, it sewed it all up.
Well, then that one has the Pope getting murdered, the Pope who lasted, what, 4 hours?
Exactly right.
The fast Pope.
Yeah, I mean,
the liberal,
you know,
Pope.
With all this hubbub of the Da Vinci Code going on right now.
Maybe it's time to re-release number 3, huh?
Oh, part 3, parts 1, 2, it's great cinema. But we want to look at it as entertainment. I think maybe that bothers people about Preston and Reese, that it really thickens the truth in a way that everyone's been comfortable.
So I got to say, every time I try to get away, they keep bringing me back. Okay, listen, thanks a lot for calling, man.
All right, thank you.
All right. 231-8187. We're here on BOO with Josh McPhee talking about postering. And I'm saying, I don't want to tar anyone else with this. Make yourself a stencil and slap it up. All right.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great things about stencils is that, I mean, they've been used historically as official markings. So people, you know, still in a lot of recent world street signs with stencils. So it immediately stylizes what you're trying to communicate, which gives it a certain set of authority, false or otherwise, that can be used to your advantage.
Listen, we know there's a lot of you out there. Just try, you probably own, but buy, if you need to, a simple file folder. Open it out. Take an X-Acto pen or a common knife and cut a simple message on it. I bet you have some paint hanging out of your house. Get your roller and your paint and roll it out on, try it on the side in front of your house. Then, you know, take it out. Take it to an empty wall, to a construction site. Slap it up.
It doesn't even have words. It could be a dove. It could be a leaf. It could be a tree.
It could be a dinosaur. Oh, this is very threatening to the religion.
I dare not agree. Bush came to visit here, not long after he was elected. I think it was August of 01 or of 02. And there was a huge protest downtown. Riot cops came out. And
they sprayed several
that's getting. There was an incident that witnessed a father and a younger kid were hit with pepper spray from the Portland police. So suddenly, all around the town, I started seeing on the sidewalk the stenciled phrase, they pepper sprayed babies.
Right.
Which was just an arresting to see.
Arresting.
And walking down the street. You saw it out there. So, you know, the seed of this is already.
No, I think people doing it. I think just more people doing it. I want to be, you know, I don't want to see this being a youth culture thing. I want to see it being a youth culture thing, plus a middle class thing, a businessman woman thing. I want to see a lawyer and a doctor thing happening. I think I actually agree with only one thing about the Bush administration. This struggle at this time in history is not a class war. This struggle at this time in history, the war for the fundamental freedom of the American people, and that embraces everybody. And I want to see everybody out there and to the other involved. We can go other kinds of politics when we can afford and when we're ready. Right now, the contradiction exists between religio-fascism of the right wing and this administration, a culture of true, real American democracy, however conservative that might be. That's where I'm at.
Agreed. We're looking at a movement that, unprecedented historical movement that's just a little more than 200 years old here,
yep.
That is really hanging in the balance.
Absolutely.
And if, you know, a little public can keep that track well, absolutely. It's
and
a small effort.
Yeah, and I have no illusion of the conservative nature of America. I mean, I teach history. I read de Tocqueville. I teach sociology. I know about this. That's not the point here. The point here is that the fundamental freedoms that make this society to the degree that it's great, great. You and I are at risk right now, and we do nothing, are responsible. In the same way that the people of Germany, the Nazi regime, were responsible. And, of course, if you wait long enough, it becomes too scary and too difficult, too. And this time you can do it. So right. Do it.
I mean, I don't know how your listeners are familiar with the recent history of Argentina, but in December of 2001, Argentina, under the weight of IMF World Bank Austerity Program, the economy of Argentina collapses. And the wealthy, the rich, basically remove all money from the banks, put it in armored trucks, and drive out of country. But wake up in the morning on December 18th and have no money anymore. It's gone. Go to the bank. The bank's closed. And then a huge movement spread of that poor working class, middle class, Finch families headed into the streets and refused to go home. And an integral part of that movement was street art. And all different kinds of people, kids, adults, elderly, people in community groups, political groupings, place groupings, developed slogans, ideas of what was going on, and would have stencil brigades that would go up paint the street of Buenos Aires. So you'd have 12 and 85-year-olds next to each other, stencil. And it became a truly democratic art form where people were communicating with each other through street art, across some boundary that would have existed otherwise.
And in your pocket, Paybox, the Devonport State, they fought Cafe at 1825 South Montgomery, passing through 16th, 8th and p.m. Anyway, at the talk you gave initially for that, you pointed out some historic stuff. You pointed out the role of graffiti art and of stencilness in the Soissons Week, the 68 rebellion in Paris, and in the rebellions against the Soviets in Prague, many, many other examples, where actually the art had an integral and significant role in changing the consciousness and the real politics of the society.
I think the more mainstream and generally considered legal means you can get pressed, the more people enforce what are generally considered legal means. So yeah, I mean, it was extreme integral also the apartheid movement in South Africa, which was criminalized. People didn't have the luxury of being able to promote their politics publicly in the street corner. They had to go underground. In Nicaragua and other Central American countries where it's were fighting against dictatorships put in place by the U.S. government. In Asia, I mean, a huge street and stem movement in Korea within the workers' movement. I mean, it's historically flourishes anywhere where mainstream or, you know, what's considered legal dissent is cracked down upon or not allowed.
Hey, look, folks out there, if you care at all, to listen, you obviously care enough to listen to this program. If you care at all, make yourselves a simple stencil and put it up somewhere. Do 10 stencilings with your stencil. See how it feels. If it feels great, do 20. And if it feels even greater, try. Let's see or come alive with the realities of the current political system. Let's put an end to our silence about this religio-fascist weirdness that is threatens to take over our entire nation.
Should we take a few more calls before we go?
I think we should take
more
calls.
Ed is next. Good morning, Ed.
Hey, Joe. Hey, that LaRocque, wasn't that greedy artist in the New York subways? The transit police captured him.
They're one of many.
One of many.
Yeah, you think they beat him to death? Something like that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
They, KRS talked about. Yeah, it gets to the point that, like, I remember in Philly, like, these guys, they were, like, from one end of the city to the other, and they put their name in, like, with a crown on top of it. And the cops, it was like a challenge. It was, like, almost like a manhunt at times.
Right.
Because of the but I think when you add political content to, like, the defiance against authority, I think they're even more prone. Like, you know that movie, They Live, where they put the glasses on, they could really see things, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's what graffiti does. And, you know, what do you do when all you have is the Oregonian, you know?
Well, I think that it really is important that the people make their voice heard. You know, there's this movie that's very, very popular, of course, set in England, V for Vendetta, and which is about Guy Fawkes as the character of revolution. And there are actually posters in Britain that say Guy Fawkes was the only guy who went to Parliament with a real purpose.
With honest intentions.
With honest intentions, right. But be that as it may, and putting Catholic conspiracies aside, It's time for us as a people to wake up to the soft fascism that threatens us.
Yeah, they call it a people's war, you know. You know, when all generations have to unite to save themselves, you know, against the country has to unite to save itself against the government. And I'm waiting to be picked up here since I'm corporately work shy, you know. And I'm sure
listen, man, think of this as a flower war. We are fighting. We are using the red rose of freedom.
Yeah, and when you have the communities of resistance, you know, this helps build it. Like you see, like he was saying, going out in Argentina, all the generations going out together doing these. It reminds me of being at the Nevada test site with the skateboarders and the blue-haired ladies going over the fence into the to stop nuclear testing. You know,
takes all of us.
Yeah, it gets to the point where everybody just has to stop what they're doing and act together and change this thing. So.
Well, absolutely, man.
Have a good one.
That's the thing that's important about street art is that as an individual expression, there's value in it, but ultimately effective, that it needs a tool to bring people together. So, you know, not just going stencil, but invite 10 of your friends over and have a potluck, make it a social event.
Yeah.
You know, use it as a way to collect, express, you know, ourselves.
The art is a beginning. It's not enough in and of itself, but it can provoke, it can stimulate, it can shock in ways that other forms of expression don't. But it's everything that goes with it,
right,
is what we're at.
It needs to work hand in hand with political movements.
Let's get some of our calls on 231-8187. Let's go out to Julie.
Hi, Joe.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, we have some great mural people here that were in the air with me on Art Focus.
Right, Isaac Samsudin, for example.
Isaka Samsudin and
it
Tom Kramer.
Uh huh.
And but I want to recall word of Aidan Catalani, whose spray can art was destroyed at night by the city of Portland. Do you remember story?
Oh, I do, yeah.
There was American Casuals, that was a clothing store down under the Morrison Bridge.
Right.
And that's not there any longer, but Aidan put up a beautiful mural there on the side of that building, and the city came at night and destroyed it. And so he put up another mural, and it said, "Civil disobedience becomes a sacred duty when the state becomes lawless and corrupt." And he put that under the damage the city had done, and that was really that was a big thing that happened, and it had a great effect in Portland, and the mayor got all excited, and what's his name, Leonard,
Randy Leonard.
Yeah, Randy Leonard. And then, anyway, we discussed that with quite a few of the artists in Portland who are doing murals. And we have a very active mural defense fund.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
How does one access the fund if I get it busted?
Well, I had a person named Oleksiak on the air, a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a lot of my notes.
Okay.
Return those right away.
All right.
Okay. Well, anyway, this is an exciting and good show.
Okay.
Hey, thanks,
John. Let's go out to another call.
Melba.
Melba.
Good morning, Melba.
Melba, are you there or are you toast?
I'm Melba.
Hi, Melba.
Sorry
for the bad joke, Melba.
Okay. I've always listened to your program. I don't think I've ever disagreed with you on anything, and I consider you one of the fair show hosts on KBOO. I've heard some people do miserable things to people who disagreed with them, and you never do that. But now my heart is racing because I don't feel like disagreeing with you, but I disagree with you about this.
Okay.
I live in the south of the Foster Corridor. I have friends who live. You know, you've been there. I have friends who are small business owners. And you cannot put up a wall, you cannot have a brick building without tremendous expense. These people are, some of them, holding on by the skin of their teeth. And you know, you turn around and it looks like someone vomited paint on the sides of everything. And you know, it is really a difficult thing. Now, I have the same frustration as everybody else about, you know, the kind of the political situation we're in, and with the corporate-owned media,
mm-hmm.
you know, we haven't very many avenues, and certainly we do need to do things like this in some fashion. But I almost hear, you know, your approval of this is just to go ply the bastard world with graffiti. And perhaps the people who actually listen to your show aren't the kind of people who would do this in a completely random fashion, but you know, it's a hardship on many people. Plus, you know, the whole public sphere, if it's ugly, it is something that makes people just want to move out into suburbia. So, I mean, you know, I think there are many other considerations in this. And while I'm not, you know, I do applaud some graffiti and that sort of thing, where people who are attacking a target that is corporate and is sort of sending the message that I don't like billboards. I think they're ugly, and
uh-huh.
you know, if they destroy billboards, well, maybe it gets the message that we would like to own what we view, our public space. We want to own what we view. We would like something beautiful there, not something some hideous.
Okay,
message.
So you see it as a kind of a problematic kind of chaotic anarchy that can hurt small businesses and damage the environment, the visual environment.
I do. I think there's a huge factor.
Let me,
there. And then everybody who's calling is agreeing with you, and I gotta say I admire and respect you and
mm-hmm.
your political opinion so much.
Position.
That I feel like maybe I'm stepping off where I shouldn't be.
No. I do know. I think it's important to bring this kind of you because we're at the show, and I want to give Josh a chance to say something, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot. First of all, I want to remind people you're listening to KBOO, and you should stay tuned. Abe and I will be back next week. Josh, a word.
I just think that graffiti is a symptom of a much larger social issue, and that it's not going to go away until that larger issue is addressed, which is that we don't have the democratic control then over our space. Point. To force it, it's of nature at this point. You can't stop it with a band-aid.
I want to thank everybody.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Josh.
See you a lot.
We'll see you next week.
All right.